If you've managed to stick with this series so far, right, you'll know that in Scripture, God is seen at war with a Satan, this sinister force at work in the world. And so we are asked to join the fight by resisting evil. We're called to a resistance movement. And over the next few weeks, I want to look at the different ways we resist.
Check, check.
Hey, oh, Joe.
Thank you, Joe. I got my right hand back. Oh, I feel good. All right. Now I feel like I need to use it really well or else it will just be of no use. All right. Back up. We're called to resist evil. And so over the next few weeks, what I want to do is I want to look at the different ways the Scripture sort of pushes us to resist evil, theological ways, economic ways, social ways, psychological ways. But this morning, what I want to do is I want to focus on how the resistance starts here. How we resist these sinister forces quite simply by doing life together, hanging out on Sunday mornings. So, my task is monumental this morning because of what I want to convince you of is that having mediocre coffee together and doing life together with this group of people is a key to fighting evil and changing the world. And so what I want to try to convince you of is that one of the most revolutionary things you can possibly do in the name of love and to resist evil in our world is to simply show up. Drink coffee together, do life together. Now, I was going to cue a laugh track right here because you would be forgiven for laughing at me and thinking this crazy, but give me a chance. Where to begin? Well, what makes this so revolutionary in my mind is a simple observation. It's this. Loving people is really difficult. One of my favorite Peanuts comic strips is this. After an altercation with Lucy, Linus screams out, "I love mankind, it's people I can't stand." Now, I don't know about you, but that hits home. That I can relate to. I mean, theoretically, rationally, politically, theologically, emotionally, I love humanity. I love the people. If you said, "Brad, how do you feel about humanity?" I would say, "I love it. Love it. Nothing better than humanity." But actual human beings, the kind that have names and personalities and beliefs, that not so much. Humanity is great, but humans, there might be nothing in the world more annoying, boring, infuriating, inconvenient. I love the idea of people, actual people I can't stand. And I'm not even talking about the big things here. I mean, people who I disagree with about big things, I reserve a special place of scorn in my heart for them. But even the people I like, I can't stand. Close friends. Yes, right? I mean, here's the thing. I might be thinking, "Brad, that seems so petty." Isn't that what it means to be human? We're so petty. And this is the thing, in terms of humanity, there is no bigger fan than me, none. If humanity was a team, I would have season tickets, I'd be decked out in all the paraphernalia, but actual human beings, I can take them or leave them. And here's the thing, I don't know about you, but for me, social media has made this so much more worse. Here's what tends to happen to me on social media. You can encounter a humanitarian crisis around the world, right? You're at your computer, you're like, "I need to make an impassioned plea about this. People! We must do something about the people, about the humanity." And then 2 minutes later, you're scrolling through and you go, "Oh, look at this guy here. Unbelievable. Can't stand this guy." 2 minutes before, "People, we must love the people. Love must trump hate." And then you're scrolling through, "That person, if he posts one more picture of his kids, I'm going to lose it. He's so vain and annoying. Oh, love the people. Can't stand the people." Or how many of you have had this? You're like, "I should go out with actual people tonight." And you're like, "Nah, I'm going to stay in, watch Netflix, hang out with fake people. That sounds like a better evening to me." Because real people are very exhausting. And so we can be outraged by what's going on to humanity and then just retreat into the comfortable life routine that we have away from actual people. Humanity is great. People we can't stand. We love the idea of people, just not real people. And here's the thing. If we're going to resist evil with love, then that love has to be concrete, local, and actualized. It's too easy to make love abstract. And this is where I believe Jesus' strategy for how love becomes concrete is truly revolutionary. For Jesus and the early church that followed him, resisting evil through love, it didn't come through political activism, but by bringing a group of people together to practice care and peace. Essentially, Jesus' strategy was this. Here we go. Let's bring together an ideological, diverse community together, filled with people who are annoying, exhausting, overly opinionated, and commit to practicing care and peace with them. You know, one of the reasons that people so flocked to Jesus was because he showed genuine care and interest in people. And this is what made him so attractive, in this ethos of genuine care for people. It was a pillar of the early church. If you look through a lot of the sort of admonitions that Paul and the other writers of the New Testament give, there's such a focus on care. Consider Romans 12:9. Love must be sincere. Hate what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. Devoted, that's a term we don't use too often today. Devoted to people. Ephesians 4, be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Oh, bearing with people. Philippians 2, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves. Not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. John, this is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us. We ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. If anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? Dear children, let us not love with words or speech, but with actions and in truth. Notice again there, John is saying love has to be actualized. It's got to be local, concrete in this community. Or in 1 Corinthians 12, God has put the body together, giving greater honor to the parts that lacked it, so that there should be no division in the body, but that its parts should have equal concern for each other. If one part suffers, every part suffers with it. If one part is honored, every part rejoices with it. For love to be moved beyond the abstract, Jesus' communities were committed to actually caring for people within their communities. But they were also committed to something we call peace. Practicing peace together, which can be a little bit kumbaya, right? Like all we're saying is give peace a chance. But you have to understand, these communities were filled with people of opposing ideologies and ethnicities. Things were tense. But living in peace with one another, getting along with each other, this was a core practice of the early church. Romans 12:8, if it's possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Romans 14, let us therefore make every effort to do what leads to peace and to mutual edification. Again, repeated over and over, 2 Corinthians, finally, brothers and sisters, rejoice, strive for full restoration, encourage one another, be of one mind, live in peace, and the God of love and peace will be with you. Ephesians 4, make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through a bond of peace. Colossians 3, let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body you were called to peace. 1 Thessalonians, live in peace with each other. Hebrews 12, make every effort to live in peace with everyone. Jesus' revolutionary resistance movement that seeks to combat evil starts with actualized, local, concrete communities of people where they simply tried to care for one another and just get along. Which isn't very sexy, is it? Just get along. What does that do for the world? So I don't know about you, but for me in my life, I want to be part of something big. I want to be part of something that's life-changing, world-changing. I want to be part of something that makes a difference in the world. But too often, I don't know about you, but what I find about myself is that this desire is far too abstract. I believe that love wins. I believe that love trumps hate. But actualizing those ideas is tougher than it looks. And so I'd say this, church at its best is this. It's the hard, intimate, sweaty work of simply getting along with people. Church is the place that won't let you or me get away with loving humanity abstractly and theoretically. To actualize love, Jesus gives us a group of people to get along with. Jesus, teach us how to love. Okay, here's a group of people. Get along. What? That doesn't sound too revolutionary. Oh, trust me. It's going to be hard. Group of people. Just see if you can get along. I mean, getting along with people sounds like the simplest thing in the world, but it's the hardest thing in the world. I mean, consider this room alone. What I know of you. There are in this room vastly different ideologies and politics and opinions and passions, and that's just the start. Because on top of that, there are some bizarre personalities in this room. And a bunch of us have egos, and we've got hang-ups and attributes and interests and hobbies and a whole bunch of other really, really weird things that make us human. And here's the thing that I've become convinced of. Jesus' idea of how to love is acted out in such a crazy revolutionary way. Love is most powerfully actualized when we surrender ourselves to a community and commit to caring for those people and living in peace with those people. It's much easier to love people in the abstract than to love actual human beings. And what the church gives you is actual human beings. And let's be honest, we don't like that because we find it easier to love humanity than we do actual people. The church I grew up in didn't have much to commend itself. So bad. Theologically, some really horrible things went on there. And actually, next week, what I want to talk about is when religion or ideology becomes demonic. So we'll explore that a little bit. But the church I grew up in got a whole lot wrong, but it got one thing very, very right. They knew how to do community. And the whole ethos of the church growing up is, listen, we get along with people we would never normally get along with. The whole idea was we spend time with people we would normally never spend time with because everyone has their place. And I tell you, this place had characters. Remember, Andrea was her name. She was a modern-day leper. She had boils and open sores all over her body, like just everywhere. And the problem was is that Andrea's gift, she loved hospitality. She loved serving food. And we were a big potluck church. Big potluck church. Like, you do the potlucks, and you do them well. The problem was, especially for us as kids, Andrea loved to serve the food. And I'm sure by now, there are probably rules about serving food with open sores, but you have to remember, as kids, you go by, she always made some sort of lasagna or casserole thing. And remember, you know, always to my parents, I'm not going to take any from Andrea. And they'd be like, yes, you are. I'm like, oh, stand by in line. Hey, can I have a piece of your lasagna? And it was just, like open sores serving you your food. And remember, it was never sort of spoken a lot, but it was like, she's a part of the community, and you're going to take her food. That's what you do. Or Ed the weatherman. Ed, he was a greeter in the church. The biggest, weirdest smile on his face all the time, his eyebrows. Hey, good morning, how you doing? Always up like this. But Ed's passion was the weather. Oh, he loved the weather. And his favorite thing was to give you a weather update. Weather update. It became a thing. Go and ask Ed about the weather. And you got to remember, this is pre-internet. You can't just type on, hey, what's going on with the weather? Weather, Ed had it down. And he would always do this thing where, I don't know what he thought he was doing, but Ed, what's the weather going to be like? He'd cover his one ear like he was listening to someone. Well, it's going to be a high of 12 today, but you might want to keep that coat handy. We've got some wind coming in. It was crazy, like detailed weather reports from Ed the weatherman. Go to church, shake hands, have Ed share the weather. Or Gary, the angry alcoholic. Oh, my goodness. He was something. Every Sunday, he walked the aisle. Bless his soul. Every Sunday, he walked the aisle because he needed to. He struggled with alcohol so bad. And so every Sunday at the end, when there was the altar call, because there was one every single week, he walked there. He needed Jesus to save him every week. He was so angry. I remember one time he was driving out of the park. It was a Wednesday night service. He was driving out of the parking lot, and some buddies and I thought it'd be funny to hit his car with snowballs. So packed up snowballs, hit him like 10 times. Hit on the brakes. He got out of the car and said, "You little," I won't repeat the next word he said, but it was a bad word. And he started chasing us like an angry grown man chasing 10-year-old kids. We had to run and hide in the forest from Gary, angry, angry Gary. And I feel like today in church, if that happens, we'd be like, yeah, you're going to have to leave the church. We don't put up with people chasing kids here. But back then it was like, hey, Gary's got some struggles. He gets angry, but he's part of the community. He's part of us. And though you would never choose to normally get along with him, he's part of us. Or Dennis. Oh, Dennis. Dennis always sat front and middle. And Dennis believed that he received messages from God, which during the church service he communicated to us via Morse code and his teeth. You can't make this stuff up. I'm not kidding you. Every Sunday through the whole sermon, this is what you heard. The whole service. And you would sit there going, oh, his jaw, because he would just hammer the whole time. And I remember hearing conversations with the dog, like, what should we do with Dennis? Should we, like, put him in a room? Like, what do we do? But it was, no. He's one of us. He's one of us. And here's the thing. We would never in a million years choose to hang out with Dennis and his crazy Morse code message from God with his teeth. It was nuts. But every Sunday, there he was. And he was a part of us. My church growing up knew community well. Not much else. But they knew community well. It was about this. Church is about doing life with people we would never normally do life with. And you know, I got to be honest, this is why I hate when people leave Nexus. And I've got a great group of friends and our leadership team here, which is always very encouraging. And Brad, you don't need to take it personally when people leave Nexus. But I do take it personally. I'll tell you why. Because ultimately, in my idealistic vision of church, when people leave, it's ultimately, it's just a failure to get along. We're not sure we agree with where you are, so we need to leave. And part of me is like, well, that's precisely the point. The fact that we can't get along or don't agree is exactly why we should be in community together. That's what makes it actually revolutionary. If we all think the same thing and get along great, well, we're a social club, not a church. You know, the truth is sometimes people need to leave churches. We're going to look at that next week. So I'm not saying there's no time to leave a church. I think there's plenty of good reasons to do that. But what vexes me most today is that so often I feel in churches there's a push to purify. In any community, there's always a push. Let's rid ourselves of those who are different from us. Rid ourselves of those we don't get along with or don't think like us or don't agree with us. But church is the voluntary step of doing life and getting along with people who don't think like us. That is what makes it a revolution. And I'll be honest, I think one of the biggest struggles for me here at Nexus is the sense I often experience that we want clarity. What are we? Are we a progressive church or are we a conservative church? And it haunts me because what Jesus was trying to create was communities that could hold polarities in tension. But none of us like ideological tensions because it makes it hard to get along. I mean, think about this. Simply navigating people's personalities and egos, that's tough enough. But you add an ideological polarization into the mix and simply getting along is the most difficult thing in the world. Which is what makes it so beautiful and strange. But the way always ends up, it happens that there's this force, it seems, at work. We see it in our politics. We see it in our churches trying to pull us to opposite poles so that we align ourselves passionately with one camp and passionately against another camp. And to be honest, for lack of a better word, I think it's demonic. I think the psychologist Carl Jung, he gives us great insight into the psychology of polarization that wages war on our communities and our church. A part of Jung's study on human development involved whether human beings could integrate opposite poles in their lives. And what he noticed was this. Early in childhood development, we are often unable to self-identify with more than one pole. As infants, it's just a little bit beyond us to do that. Excuse me. I'm currently experiencing this with my three-year-old son, Huxley. No, don't. No. Can I tell you what happened this week? We were playing around the living room. He tried to hit me in the face, which is not unusual. This stuff happens. Tried to hit me in the face, and I got his hand in time, and I said, hey, whoa, buddy. We're Watsons. We don't hit each other. Okay? We're Watsons. We don't hit each other. He looked at me with a scowl, and he said, I don't care. This is a problem for me because Kristen's great at this stuff, but I'm horrible because I start laughing when he says stuff like this. Like, I just find it hilarious. Tough guy, three-year-old. Okay. So I thought, okay, I'm going to switch tactics. So I said, well, buddy, you know what? We're also Jesus people. And Jesus people, they don't hit other people. That's not what Jesus people do. He scowled up his face again. He said, well, I don't love Jesus, and Jesus doesn't love me. Oh, it was hilarious. No, he's fine. Kristen assured him that Jesus loves him. It was fine. I was like, oh, it cracks me up. But we've been having this thing. Every night when I tuck him into bed, I tuck him in, give him a hug, a kiss, and I say, good night, Huxley, I love you. And lately what's been going on is when I say, I love you, buddy, what he'll say is this, well, I don't love you, I only love mommy. Yeah. So after picking up the pieces of my heart, I keep reminding him, hey, Hux, you know it's okay to love us both, right? No, I only love mommy. And I'm very grateful to be familiar with Carl Jung's work in this regard. Because what he talks about is this. In stages of development, when we're young, at a certain age of development, we don't have the capacity to embrace more than one pole. And so there's this idea, or that's what I keep telling myself anyway. There's this idea, if he loves me, it would be betraying Kristen. He can't comprehend he can have love for us both. To love us both, to love different poles, is emotionally more than his mind can handle at the moment. And so until he progresses, loving me and mommy will feel beyond him. And here's the thing about Carl Jung. He explains that this phenomenon actually can continue into adulthood if we don't mature. It causes people to relate in either or categories. And we see this everywhere today. And what I've become convinced of is this. As adults and as a society, we are regressing emotionally. We regress emotionally, become infants when we dislike or distrust a people group. To hate another group religiously, politically, socially, is to become infantile. Polarization is not the result of intellectual enlightenment or informed thinking. It's the result of emotional regression. I'd say culturally today, we seem to have the emotional maturity of three-year-olds. And this, to me, is why the Jesus movement is so revolutionary. To sign up and join Jesus movement is to take on the mature work of integrating different poles without regressing into either or categories. I mean, I think what you could say about Jesus was this. He was about forming communities that busted up polarizations. And yet I feel like we've neutered the church. We want to purify. Get rid of them. Liberal, conservative. And what I've come to think is this. The moment you land in one, you've killed anything about the church that makes it revolutionary. I mean, you have to remember, this is so fascinating. First century communities, they were formed in the midst of some of the most violent polarization history has known. Jews and Gentiles crazy. When a Jew called someone uncircumcised Gentile, they spat it with disgust and contempt. You uncircumcised. Puh. I'm also told this, that when a Jewish person married a Gentile, the Gentile parents would hold a symbolic funeral service for their child. Can you imagine doing that to your child? You married the wrong person. You're essentially dead to us. They regarded each other as subhumans. Ah, the hatred. But in the first century, along comes this group of people who are invited to transcend their ideological differences. And so Christian community always started out as a space where polarities were being woven together through Christ's powerful love. It was a place of staying in the tension rather than siloing apart. You know, here's the reality. It doesn't take much to look around and realize that Nexus is not exactly ethnically diverse. I would say this, a lot of the ethnically diverse churches I know or aware of, they're quite homogenous when it comes to ideology. But here's the thing. Here's what Nexus can be, though, and I believe strongly in this. I believe we can be ideologically diverse. And I believe we are. And I believe that instead of wanting to resolve that tension, I believe we can play into it and make it one of our greatest strengths. Because this is, I believe, what Jesus envisioned all along. Working into those tensions. Our last leadership meeting was fascinating. We were talking about some Nexus kids stuff, and you'll hear more about that next week at the Nexus family meeting. But it was one of those beautiful meetings where we all argued, and it came out beautifully at the end. But you know, anytime you have ideas in a room, opposing ideas, emotions run high, there's tensions. And so we're trying to resolve, trying to figure out some ways forward. And there's, no, I don't agree with that. That's not where I am. And then suddenly I'm disagreeing with this person over there. And there was just this chaotic kind of, we get into a room and it's hard and it's difficult. And the temptation is always at that point to be like, I'm out. But this is the hard part of actualizing love. If we only love people who think and behave like us, it's meaningless. In fact, I think Jesus might have said something like that. And in my mind, if we want to make the world a better place, our love must move beyond the abstract and move into the hard, hard work of loving people, actual people. Here's the thing as well that I've noticed about myself. In general, when we love humanity in the abstract, one of the things that's persistently hidden from us is our own inner demons. Community, real community, it involves exposure. Only community reveals our inner brokenness and sinfulness. See, spiritual exposure is ultimately, I think, what we oftentimes try to avoid when we love humanity abstractly. But community will not let you get away with it. Here's what community actually does. I've noticed this. True community brings us into contact with people who expose our jealousies, our pettiness, our impatience, our intolerance, our selfishness, and our vanity. And what committing and sticking with community does is very quickly expose how you and I are a part of the problem. Jean Vanier, he was the founder of L'Arche, he once said this about community. Community is the place where our limitations, our fears, and our egotism are revealed to us. We discover our poverty and our weaknesses, our inability to get on with some people, our mental and emotional blocks, our affective and sexual disturbances, our seemingly insatiable desires, our frustrations and jealousies, our hatred and our wish to destroy. While we're alone, we could believe we loved everyone. Now that we're with others, we realize how incapable we are at loving. Isn't that the truth? In community, our inability to love is exposed, along with our inability to just get along with certain people. It's community that will lead you to eventually confess, I love humanity, it's people I can't stand. And in a world of posturing and polarization, what all of us could use on either side is a healthy reminder, loving people is a whole lot harder than we make it out to be. And part of the problems and challenges we face in the world is this, the evil just isn't out there, it's in here. It's our own inner demons. It's one thing to condemn hate out there. It's quite another to confront our own petty hatred in here. but community will force you there. And if it hasn't happened to you yet at Nexus, it's because you haven't gone far enough down the rabbit hole. There's a person who's no longer with us at Nexus, used to come here for a while, but boy, was there animosity between the two of us. And it started out, you know, or those sort of thing where this person just, every time I met with them, I just felt constantly like I wasn't doing enough. Nexus wasn't enough. It felt like complaining. And, you know, everyone's got a bit of a breaking point. And I remember watching sort of my inner self go from, this person drives me nuts, move into a sort of Schadenfreude. That idea that you almost want to see or take delight when something bad happens to them. And so I would see things where things wouldn't go their way online or whatever, and there would be this sort of secret glee, like, ah, you got what's coming to you. And you know, for me, it sort of always points things back here, because the hate that I condemn out there, what community has done for me is helped me realize that it exists very powerfully in here. And what community will do is force you to realize so much of what we see as evil out there resides in here. Give yourself over to community, you will be exposed. It's just a matter of time. It will reveal to you the pettiness inside. And so community, I would say this, it's like a laboratory of love. It's one thing to preach love, it's another to actualize it with a small group of people. So what I would say to you is this, and the reason why I felt like this Sunday is perhaps the most important Sunday of the whole season is this, is I want to tell you something. Don't ever underestimate what you being a part of Nexus is all about. Because I'm sure all of us wonder, what is the point of being part of a church sometimes? Why do I show up there Sundays and the coffee's not that great and it's weird and dark in here? And listen, I have those same doubts. What are we doing sometimes? Here's what I want to tell you. You know what you're doing here? Do you fully understand sometimes what you're actually a part of? Because the reality is this, I don't tell you often enough from up front, but what this is a laboratory of love. It's a divine experiment as to how viable love really is. By being part of Nexus, you are doing the small, concrete, actualized work of love. Don't ever forget that. Because this may seem small in a world that has huge problems. This is not small at all. It's an incredibly bold and courageous decision to be part of a community. I think it's one of the most revolutionary things the world has ever seen. To say, I'm going to join a group of people and be with them and simply try to care and get along with them. The world needs more of that. And you know, there are hundreds and hundreds of books out there outlining the reasons why many people don't go to church. And you know, I think a lot of them are valid. Troubles with faith, and there's hundreds of reasons why people don't go to church. But you know what doesn't get talked about a lot? I think maybe a big reason a lot of people don't come to church is because they can't hack it. And I don't say that to disparage them, but to simply acknowledge community is tough work. It requires a huge heart, a humble spirit to say, I'm going to try to actualize love with these people right here. I don't want to make community sound too awful. There will be moments of glory in community. There'll be times when loving each other feels like the easiest thing in the world. Let me tell you, when I win the Chipsmas Award this Christmas, it will unite all of us under a common umbrella. It'll feel like the most glorious thing that's ever happened. We will be united together. No, sometimes it's so easy, it feels so good in community. When we work together to sponsor a refugee family, when we share about our struggles and realize that Nexus is a safe place to struggle and doubt, when you realize someone who you would not normally ever spend time with loves you and cares about you, it's the most glorious thing in the world. Community feels like the best thing. But there will also be times of real tension. And there are going to be moments when we realize that we are very different from one another. maybe times when our own politics or ideology come into conflict with others. There will be times when this right here is the most difficult thing in the world. Times when you want to take off or find another church or God is calling you somewhere else. It's my favorite. There'll be times when you think this is not worth it. There'll be times when it won't be easy. But here's the thing. Did we ever think resisting evil would be easy? Of course it won't be easy. Working in a lab of love is never easy. And in those times, may we remember that actualizing love is a resistance. It's a battle, and we're all going to carry our battle scars because of that. 2 weekends ago, my parents took the whole family to Great Wolf Lodge. Jeez, what a crazy place that is. Have you been there? I wouldn't recommend it. It's a little crazy. It's just this massive theme park. We took the kids. The kids love it. Worst part is what they love the most is sleeping in the bunk beds. So they don't even love the park as much. They just, hey, we get to sleep in bunk beds. And it's just weird because you got to go to kid dance parties and it's awkward and whatnot. But the kids had a wonderful time. So we went 2 weekends ago and we got all the kids together. And then the adults, we just sat down and started talking, you know, doing what adults do. And then it happened. Of course it would happen. We're Watsons, of course it would. Politics came up. And let's just say I don't see eye to eye with my parents on politics. And I should have known better. That's the thing. I should have known better. But I think there was tension built up all day because there was yelling kids all around and I needed an outlet or something. But I took the bait. And there we go. Now we're talking politics. And it proceeded to get louder. And the arguing got heavier. And then we're going back and forth, and it started to do with faith and how faith and politics are tied together. And when it gets into that kind of stuff, it gets personal, and it was just getting ugly. And at one point, I thought my dad was going to beat me up, and he's 67, and he could still take me, no problem. And like, it was tense. And at 2 in the morning, we're like, enough, we got to go to bed. I went to bed, I'm like, they drive me nuts. Ugh. Went to bed, and then you ever have that, I don't know if you call it argument hangover. I woke up in the morning, I'm like, oh, what have I done? Like, this is going to be the most awkward day. Because now we're stuck playing in the water park while there's this tension together. Remember, we met, whole family met around a table there. We had breakfast together. I could sense the tension in the air. It was just this unspoken thing. My mother got up. As I got there, we gave each other a hug. We didn't say anything about the night before, just gave each other a hug. And got about the business of having fun together. And what was gently being said in that moment was this. I'm still in this. I'm still a part of this. I'm not going anywhere. We're going to have to make this work. We're going to have to get along because we're family. And quite frankly, I need you to babysit sometimes. So we're gonna have to make this work. That's the thing. Here's the thing. We have to do that because we're family. Families have to do that because you're going to see each other at Thanksgiving and Christmas. You're going to see each other. So, of course, you have to get beyond your differences. That's what families do. But imagine this. Imagine the commitment you have to your family because of blood you voluntarily gave to others who have no relation to you. Imagine the same commitment you have to family to keep showing up despite the arguments and the differences. Imagine you gave that to a whole community of people who have no relation to you. That right there, now that, my friends, is the kind of thing, the small and actualized way that love starts to get traction in the world. That's worth giving your life to. That is where the world starts to change. And Jesus calls us to a resistance movement of love, a movement of love that asks us to care and live in peace with actual people in an actual community. So this morning, welcome to the Lab of Love. Here are 100 people. 100 actual people. There is absolutely nothing abstract about this. In this room are actual people with ideas and beliefs and egos and personalities. And this group of people here will give you moments of ecstasy and fun and beauty. But at times it's going to be really, really hard to love beyond our differences. Not only hard, it's going to feel like a battle. But if you want to join the resistance movement, it starts here. And you just might find that this is where love starts to get traction in the world. This is where loving humanity meets loving actual people.